Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Look at the screen. William Blix, the great red dragon, and the woman clothed in the rays of the sun. Do you see?
I know that I'm not smart.
Then how did you catch me?
You had disadvantages.
What disadvantages?
You're insane.
Do you see?
You're so sly. So am I.
Do you see?
You're supposed to be his friend, Jack. Why didn't you leave him alone?
Do you see? Mrs. Leeds, do you see?
Yes.
You want the scent?
Smell yourself.
Do you see?
Just you and me now, sport.
Do you see?
You've seen these films, haven't you, my man?
You owe me awe.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mindhunter, a podcast examining Michael Mann's 1986 adaptation of Thomas Harris's amazing Red Dragon. It is called Mindhunter. This show is called Mindhunter. It strikes me that some folks may have been listening recently to the Manola Dargis episode. This series could have easily been called Man with Two N's Hunter, but it's Mindhunter. Because that's what my brain says that we should do. I'm your host, Blake Howard. One of my dearest and friends and favorite people that I ever get to speak to has joined me today for a scene. And it's a bit weird because I'm not going sequentially. Sometimes we're crossing over minutes. So this technically is the 19th sequence, but there'll be more episodes than sequences, as you would have seen go along. She's a film critic. A TV critic over at New York Magazine and Vulture. She very recently wrote an absolutely spellbinding piece on the 25th hour at Bright Wall Dark Room, which I just absolutely adored. And we're just, you know, often hanging out, harassing people like Megan Blair and Jeremy Saulnier to talk to us both at the same time, resulting in Jeremy Saulnier walking up to me at a screening of Miami Vice in LA from a distance. He was walking towards me and I'm looking at him. And I'm got like, you, we know when you know someone and you're like, how they're looking at me and I know that person and who the hell is that? And I'm like, oh my God, that's Jeremy Saulnier. And I took a selfie, and we had a chat and I hugged him and freaked out. And the first person, I stopped what I was doing and I immediately text my great guest, Roxana Haddadi, and said, look at what happened.
Thanks,
look at
buddy.
What just happened.
I know. I literally lost my mind at that text. It was, first of all, it was so rude to be on the other side of the country. Like, never am I more annoyed to live outside Washington, D.C. than when you guys are in L.A. together. It's so hurtful.
I'm sorry.
But it, you know what? It's all of California that is at fault. Because how could one state have so much? You know who's at fault? World geography.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very excited to do this with you. Mindhunter, fascinating name. Uh-huh. Love it. Uh-huh. Excellent wordplay. And I'm really excited for the sequence we're going to talk about.
Yeah, it's this series has been so fun doing it this way, tackling and unpacking and picking apart things. And I think I'm looking forward to doing it with you because it just feels like a nice, without being as psycho as I have been in the past about adhering to minutes, it's nice to just kind of like, I'm going to chart a series of scenes that have meaty stuff in them, and we're going to unpack them as we see fit and find new things. And I've found, especially in a couple of the sequences I've done multiple times, it's like, well, they're just so much fun to just really pour over and feel like we're getting through it. So hopefully folks are who are listening are having a really good time. I'm having a great time. So that's really all that matters at this point. Is like, if I'm having a great time, then I feel like we're having a great time. So
that clearly is what matters the most. At a certain point, the audience becomes irrelevant, right?
Like, with much luck, one day my friends are all going to tell me that there's just this seriously large group chat where they have like custody, where they're like, all right, you've got custody of Blake's insanity this week, Rox. So you're going to have to talk to him about whatever nonsense he's doing.
Just a crazy round robin of endless movie discussion. But again, this is a good one to do it for. This really is like very fascinating Michael Mann choices, right? Like, it feels like such a, I don't even know how to put it, like a definitive 80s text, like, of course, of that time. And you see how much he's influenced everything that has come before. But it's also just such an interesting twist on what he normally does in terms of like crime and obsession, because it's a little bit more recognizable for us, for like an investigator to become obsessed with a serial killer. Like, that feels like a more comfortable, predictable sort of like American pop culture formula. But like, all the flourishes in this movie, all the style. And I think the section we're going to talk about today is so both really stylish and beautiful to watch, and also packed with all of the like, can you ever understand another person? The big question of like Michael Mann's work to me, right? Like, can you ever understand another person? And I think that's like an impossible thing that he just always wants to get to the heart to.
And what's so funny is, and there was none of like, this was a theme, an obsession with serial killers before they were even known as serial killers, like Jack the Rippers and stuff had been in texts before. But like, Michael Mann makes it in the 80s. And it just feels like, and especially someone like you who consumes a hell of a lot of TV and has to write about it, in this genre, they all feel like they're talking to Manhunter in some way. Like, actually the big, deep shit of like, chicken or the egg conversation, or am I killing myself by hunting this killer? And like, in one of our shows that we both love, like Mindhunter, another great show, and one of my favorite characters ever in this genre, Bill Tench. You see people got like hunting these people down and dismantling their whole lives as they do it. And I just, I think this movie gets at it in all the fun procedural stuff too, but it just gets at that, like, the cost. There is something that is so apparent. And yeah, like you said, can you ever really know someone? Like, I feel like I was watching, I won't say what trashy new Netflix car driving lawyer drama that my wife and I were stupefying ourselves with last night.
But I wonder what it could be.
I wonder what it could be. But it was the Subaru solicitor. But basically, we were watching it and there was a guy going like, he could just never do this. I know him so well. He'd never hurt a fly. And I was just like, I'm really tired of that. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
Everyone could hurt everything.
Everyone could hurt everything. I think, I mean, we don't need to get political on this show, but the past year of our lives, anyone is capable of anything. And yeah, that's like the Coen brothers line, right? It's like, can you ever really know someone? But yeah, I mean, Mindhunter, of course, has a through line here. X-Files. Something I love about X-Files is, yes, they're investigating the supernatural, but you learn that Mulder was like a respected investigator tracking like serial killers and shit before he became obsessed with figuring out what happened to his sister. So pretty much all of these like touchstone dramas that try to figure out like if your mission is knowing a bad man, is it inevitable that you could also become a bad man? I mean, the heat eternal question, right? You never wanted a
Yes.
normal type life. But the way that this movie does it, especially if you watch it compared with like Silence of the Lambs or the later Hannibal Lecter show that was on NBC here in the US. Like, we've had a lot of different spins on this, but I still think that this film is probably the most thorough examination of you're gonna lose yourself. And there
Yes.
is no like end to this cycle, right? Like, every time you think, like, well, we got Lecter, or well, we got Francis, there's gonna be another person waiting. And that was the beauty of Mindhunter too, right? They're going around these prisons and talking to all these people who have killed, and that doesn't end. The work is useful and it's meaningful, but the death doesn't end.
Yeah, because it's like it's almost like a species flaw. Like you have that, this that people you find these instances of abhorrence that just pop up. Like there's no, they're not, they're random in some ways, and they're trying to undo the random. I do want to say two things. One of my favorite X-Files moments, because I never talk about, when I was a kid, I was obsessed with the X-Files and I loved
We
it.
all were,
Of course. But one of my favorite scenes, I think it's the last episode of the series before they did the movie. There's a little kid who's playing chess, whose opponent gets assassinated, and there's a whole bunch of police around, FBI agents that are examining what had happened in this assassination. And it was that one time where Mulder does the real, like, he's actually the best detective in the room flex, where he's like, so the kid anticipated the shot and moved away. And then they look at the video, and the little kid, like, looks back up to the rafters before he, like, accidentally knock something off the table and moves. And I just remember that scene, like it stuck with me forever. Like that scene is so amazing. And I'm like, oh yeah, he's a gangster. That's totally right. But yeah, so it's really cool. Look, we are sticking with the theatrical cut because it is just more readily available. But I think a lot of the stuff that Rox and I are talking about, it really gets a few extra flourishes in the director's cut. Again, damn the people of Los Angeles, including the people I love there. You got to see a 70mm print of Michael's man's personal director's cut,
These jerks.
which is an offense. Thank you very much. So we're gonna. We are in the theatrical cut. We're 1 hour, 18 minutes, and 22 seconds. We've got about 7-ish minutes that we're going to be tackling here. And this is Will in the records department. That's where we kick off. We've just seen Francis and his date petting a sedated tiger, or Francis enjoying his date petting a sedated tiger. We're going to dive into it now, Rox and I together. You guys are going to listen along and then hear us pick all over it and stop it and unpack it all the way through. Here we go.
Rearrange the dead families into an audience to see what you do. You think that what you do will make you into something different.
Doesn't this just feel like a play for like 10 seconds? Like some like
Oh,
cruddy.
100%.
I just love this like cruddy, like on a stage, like a one man show almost, like for just a second. It's just so beautiful. William Peterson is like, we're paused at it and 1 hour, 18:36. He's just like sitting there. There's a truck, there's furniture. If you have a look in the sort of center frame near his head, it's Jacoby. So you can see that it's one of the families here and it's all their furniture that's been packed up or impounded. And he's just sitting under this downlight, casting a shadow. He looks more like himself. It's one of the first times where he's wearing like a kind of Floridian shirt, after he's had to be forced to wear a suit and stuff like that. I just love the whole composition of this scene is just so great, with all this cascading stuff all packed up, locked away in a cage, and the cage is open, and Will's sitting right in the cage, just relishing, relishing the painful thing of going through someone who's passed away's stuff, and he's just like there trying to muse on it, which is really great and also creepy.
Well, I think it's like it's three things I think about. One, I love the hallway push in.
Yes.
Because as always in this movie and in Mann's movies, it's so much about like perspective. So what are we being invited into when we come down this hallway and look at this? I also love that we are going behind a cage, behind an enclosure, immediately after seeing the tiger outside of one.
Yes.
Right. So I
Both
love how
tigers.
much,
Both tigers.
so I love how much this movie does with like what is wild, what is domesticated, what do we allow in, what do we try to keep out. And then of course that so much of this movie is like Will basically doing what Francis does, right? Like surrounding himself like with the debris of these families to try to like understand what it is about them that works or what it is about them that's fascinating. So that's what I love about this is that you're getting so much of that like role reversal, and Will is getting, to your point, like sweatier, more unkempt. Like my man is slowly losing his mind. But yeah, he is doing this almost like Hamlet soliloquy thing in this evidence room, just trying to figure out like what does this killer want? What is the nature of becoming? And I honestly think like a lot of this movie is just beautifully written by Mann, because all of these like grandiose statements about like transformation and growth and sort of ascension do feel, yes, very creepy because we know that they're tied to death, but they do almost take on this like religious tone, right? There is something
If we don't see some of the
big.
dialogue from this movie printed on someone's water bottle, then like it
Yes.
does like feel like that sometimes. You see people with like
Yeah.
motivational
Yeah,
graffiti
like
over.
it's like grind set. Like there is a way that this movie can be construed into like the worst Instagram influencer you know, thinking of this as like Patrick Bateman-esque,
Oh,
like grind set mentality. But yeah, this sort of like push in. I love the way that we understand Will's process in this scene and what he's trying to get to.
yeah, it's really great. And just stylistically, I know that's like a canonical TV text, and I'm talking to a great TV critic here too. It's like feels very Homicide on the Street, just like homicide-y like push into a
And
very.
Homicide, to your point, did so much like theatrical type staging within the interrogation room, within the crime scenes. There was always sort of this sense of everything was arranged optimally so that great actors like Andre Brouwer could like stride around, move around, or choose to be still in that space. So yeah, there's just a really good sense here of, I mean, Will does not move around, but a really great sense of like set design that even in this little like US government impounded evidence room, we understand how people's lives can be reduced to things and how those things can or cannot tell us who they were.
Yeah, I think that that's a great point. It's just like a whole family's life is just and
Boxes.
just boxes and like misaligned stacked furniture and like these odds and sods that don't fit, you know, a truck, a lamp, a little nightlight. It's just like that's not a life. But he's trying to find it. He's trying to find where something breathes for him here. It's really incredible. It's kind of like watching any movie recently, trying to find if it's alive. And most of the time I feel like when I watch a movie from 2024, the vast majority that I've seen, I'm like Will Graham right now sitting here in this lockup going, is any of this alive? No. Okay.
I
We'll all go back.
mean, the distressing thing about watching a movie from 2024 is that this would probably be green screened, right? Because there's so many things in 2024 where I'm like, surely that's a real location. And then you watch the behind the scenes and it's like, oh, you guys were eating at a cafe that wasn't actually real.
So weird.
But with this, it's like you get the texture and you get the tactile sense. And I think, especially for this section that we're talking about, to me, that idea of like texture, something you can touch, something from which you can attempt to like glean warmth or understanding or interiority, like for this few minutes that we're talking about, I think that's like a really fundamental guiding theme.
Absolutely. Let's keep going.
Let's keep
You're
going.
becoming. What is it you think you're becoming? The answers in the way you use the mirrors. What do the mirrors make you dream you're becoming?
I mean, there's a
Yeah.
we've done this big composition, this beautiful, slow, languid push. Almost like, even though the volume doesn't necessarily change in what he's saying, it's like it becomes more clear despite the music. And then there's this hard insert cut to him feeling the texture of just this slightly bloody sheet something, whatever he's got in his hand. He's got a very utility watch, sturdy, and he's just holding it. And it's just like, there's just something, I don't know. This is where, in these moments where it's like, we're about to hear Francis talk about homework with Reba, where we've got Will here, like touching an item of clothing of a dead woman. And you're just like, my word, this is just, Michael Mann wants to really bring in the impact, you know? And there's a great line in one of the Mindhunter episodes when they're looking. They're preliminarily investigating BTK, who they never get to on the show because they can't, because they would have had to go to the 2000s to catch this freaking guy. But there's a moment where it's like, one of the first investigators on the case like slept on his couch with a shotgun for a year because the police were known on television, and he was scared that BTK, because they didn't know who he was just going to start coming around and killing the police who were part of that. And it was just like very Eric Bana Munich. The guys sleep in their closet because they don't want their beds to be bombed, etc. It's just like, this is the stuff where you're getting uncomfortably close to the impacts, the real world psychological impacts of surrounding yourself with this awfulness for all the time. It's like, and he kind of has to. He needs to touch it. He can't just look at a picture anymore, and salivate over it like Hannibal Lecter. He's like, no, I need to touch this stuff.
It's like you need to touch the stuff. And I also think, I mean, this could potentially be going into the space of like junk science, but I do think there is potentially something to whether you actually feel the emotions that have been like absorbed by items, or whether it is all just sort of like your mind tricking itself into believing that like an object could have absorbed something deeper, something immaterial, something emotional, regardless of whether or not you think that is like potentially true or not. As a viewer, Will clearly thinks it's true as a character, right? And
Yes.
so I think sort of this intrusion into this space that is both holy in a way, right? Because it is like the items of the dead, and there is a sort of like memento mori feeling about trespassing into these items. But to your point of like, he has to. And so much of the movie up until this point is him sort of resisting this
Yes.
and not necessarily wanting to go all the way in, being afraid of what could happen with Lecter, his panic attack after that prison meeting, right? And so this feels so much like the everything has led me to this moment. There is nothing else I can do. I have to surround myself with the items of the dead and try to make their death something useful, never something worthwhile, right? But to
No.
try to get something from it. And I love that you pointed out the contrast between this like creamy ivory sheet, which is barely speckled with blood, right? The
Yes.
blood is not the focus of the frame, I don't think. I
No.
think it's just the white and this shade, because when we then go into like Francis's home, we're returning to like a more neon color palette.
Yes.
And this feels in such extreme contrast to that. And just a lot of things in this movie that it's based on. Like, does this item absorb light? Does it reflect light? What
Yeah.
does it look like? For someone like Francis, who is obsessed with looking, what did he see in this and what meaning did he attach to it? I think a lot of that is really within that scene.
And it's got this almost like the light and the cardboard, it's like it's absorbing into the ivory. You know, it's like a, it's got these like yellower tones, like it's absorbing it. It's like whether it's his hand or the light or the cardboard, it's yeah, it's just, it's a very special little cut, tactile. But let's go into the home of one of the coolest movie serial killers.
Let's go into the home where I'm like, unfortunately, I would live here.
Unfortunately, everyone, this is what my office looks like. Here we go. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, the
Finally.
Red Dragon. Yep.
Love this. This deep red. I mean, talk about. I really want like someone who's good at impersonating terrible real estate agents to just give us a guided tour of Francis's home.
I mean, what I love about
Are the
Francis's
girls on
home,
Selling Sunset doing right now? You know what I mean?
yes, they should do this right now. But again, just in terms of like time and place, these like Coke glass windows
Yes.
were so like the Coke glass room dividers were so of this time. And if you remember, the Heat House has them as well. And they are one of my like coveted real estate design features.
Oh my God. When we get offline, you and I are going to start talking to our
I
partners
know.
about, do
I
we
know.
need glass dividers anywhere?
Yeah, is there? I know the house is really small, but what if we just had one? Is that acceptable?
Could I embed one in a door? Why?
Yeah, ooh, that would actually be fascinating. We should do that's a perfect idea. But yeah, so like we have this very dark, and I love how the poster is introduced. There's no
Yes.
fanfare.
No,
It's
it's
just
like,
like, oh
why did.
yeah, here's this poster that means something to him. You're gonna have to do the work for what it means, but there's no big moment,
No.
right? It's just there.
It's just there. And then there's like this, the most diabolically terrifying 1 hour, 19 minutes, 24 seconds, diabolically terrifying reading nook with space photography and room dividers. And you're like, no one would ever want to read there. It's terrifying.
No, it's horrifying.
Cameras tracking left to right. We go from this beautiful warmth of a bathroom. It's like sort of soft tile, like off-whitey colors and this red painting that's like crimson. And then it's just panning across. It's just getting it. And here's the beautiful Joan Allen as Reba. Her little top is like blending into the colors of the room so much. It's just like.
Very like seafoam. The room is lit very green. It'll be more green when we go to where Francis actually is. But yeah, it's this mix of this sort of like blood red poster that you know is incredibly important to him. And then the rest of the space, which even the fact that it is like natural imagery, even space imagery is not of this world, right? It still is like a sense of like otherness and a sense of like not belonging. So
Yeah,
I love what we're doing
it's a space
with
station. He
color.
yeah, it's a
Yeah.
space station. She's now in orbit. Like we don't know where this is. It looks futuristic and it blends lots of old knick-knacky kind of feeling to something new, and that's just like the decor of this house.
Yeah.
But I also, I love the practical thought of like Michael Mann finding a place like this and going, okay, this is what I need on the walls. Like I just love that
Yeah.
somewhere in his
Yeah.
mind he's done that. That's just
Yeah.
always like tickles me of like, nah, not weird enough. Not enough glass dividers. Like, no, we need.
Not weird enough. And also, like, the thing that you get from this house also is that, like, this man, I don't want to say is on a budget, but we're dealing with someone who has like very purposefully
Yes.
selected these items. It does seem,
I will buy
again,
that lamp.
just
I will buy the
I
lamp
will
we're
buy
looking
that lamp. I will buy this
at.
fuzzy brown chair. But again, to go from like the discards of these lives that he has destroyed to the things that he purposefully is choosing for his space. That's again just such a like smart editing point to again make us think about like what is the impact of Francis? Like what is his sprawl on both his own life and those of his victims?
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Follow Reba.
Yeah, let's go with her.
I've always found this sequence, I'm going to talk over as we're coming in, and I might even just rewind it. I might take it back just a whisker, because I'll talk over it. So we go to the Red Dragon. I just love this sequence. There are rarely things that terrify me as much as this sequence, where it's this amazing Red Dragon. We've got these beautiful vases, almost like something that could be in like Palo Alto. And then you're in this like creepy green lit like reading nook, and then this sweet, innocent, sort of glacially beautiful woman walking into his lounge room, this huge view that goes out into the waterway in Missouri. It's not actually Missouri, but where it's set in the film. And Francis watching something and going to sit on this big blue couch. And I don't know, there's such a Lair thing where she's like, she can't see any of the significance of what she's doing. She's just trying to navigate. And it's just like, yeah, it's, you know, it pairs so beautifully with the sedated tiger scene, because this is right now her a second sedated tiger scene. He's another sedated tiger, like this absolutely awful, deadly thing that it's just kind of sedated because it's in its own space. And I just love it. I love all these reflections. You can see all this beautiful, you know, little record players and kind of little buffets that are there and green vases and the things to capture the light. It's just really special. This, and you know, nice little corner, L-shaped blue lounge, comfortable glass coffee table here, capturing those reflections. It's really, and here he is, little old projector. She's so happy.
I know. But again, it's like all the sense of selection. Like, I don't know if I'm making myself as clear as I should be, but I guess what I'm thinking about is like Silence of the Lambs. When we eventually get to Buffalo Bill's home, you get the sense that the basement is the only place that he has really cared about, right? It's like where all his sewing equipment is. It really feels like there's just this one part of this home that he has provided attention to. Whereas this home feels so specific and so designed. And because it has that level of intentionality, at least for me, it makes it that much more shocking that she has been invited in.
Yes.
Right? Like she feels like such an intrusion onto this space. And I love what you said about him watching her, because as soon as she sits on the couch, the process of watching him watching the film reel, which we eventually see what the film reel is, and him isolating that woman's body parts and then looking at Reba's same body parts. And there really is, I think, this sense of assessment happening, which is, I think from Francis's perspective, this reel fits within my space because this is a woman that I can observe on my own terms. Are you also going to be the kind of woman that I can observe on my own terms? Right? There is this like mirroring happening of him taking something constrained and captured already in the film and transferring it onto Reba and attempting to constrain and capture her, which is done so well and so pointedly and so creepily. Like it is just extremely unsettling to see him like looking at that woman's breasts and then look at her chest under her shirt, right? And there are these extreme close-ups that just limit her to pieces of herself. And I think it's like
that's
a very effective way to make us see his perspective on things within the comfort of his own space.
And I think he's so spot on because, and just to carry the theme, we were talking offline about houses and furniture and things just casually before we started this. And there are definitely times in your life where you like move into, whether it's an apartment or a house, and you're like, I've only been able to afford the shitty, like cheap IKEA lamp, or, you know, in the States, it's like you've got the Walmarts, you just go to Walmart, you pick up a lamp or whatever the case may be. And sometimes you find yourself in fortunately a financial position or combined financial position where you've got like a family home. And, you know, when you buy a purchase for a new couch or a new lamp or a coffee table, it becomes a real like design decision where you're like, is this the coffee table we want to have forever? And when you're walking around,
does this work?
And if we buy this lamp, is that too, you know, kind of extreme with the couture? Like, what do we do to set things up, etc.? And so, but you're so right about this. And this is what, like, again, one of the many, you know, one of the many reasons that one could hate Brett Ratner's Red Dragon is that it's just like the Psycho house. Like, they take Francis Dolarhyde and they're like, what is a creepy house? Let's just go back to Hitchcock. You know, let's go all the way back to the 50s, 60s and go, this is a gothic conception of like creepiness and whatever. And what's so much more real and tactile in the world of serial killers, especially when you start looking at, you know, some of the more infamous serial killers who last a lot longer, like your BTKs, like your Golden State Killers, they live normal lives where they go to furniture stores and they buy nice things and they go on holidays with their family. And I think that leap from this person can actually conduct themselves in a normal life despite how creepy and weird they are and buy furniture and do these things is actually another layer of being scary, because that's how much harder they are to detect and how much longer they can go on. Because this guy thought about that beautiful glass that we're looking at on this table, and he thought about the stacked coffee tables, and he thought about this beautiful like gold trimmed lamp with its like ornate stuff. It's like, this is a person who setting his whole life up. And as you said, before we get into the watching of it, it's like, that's what's scary. Like, I'm looking at that buffet and I'm like, that's a beautiful buffet. That's a beautiful buffet, Roxanne.
The glass in which he prepares her gin and tonic unasked Lovely fluted glass. It's a little bit frosted. It's a beautiful piece. I think it has textured, like nibbins across it. It's wonderful. The last thing I want to say about this, because you laid it out so well, is I also love that this main living space of his, where he has set up this video player and where he theoretically watches all of his victims, right, is also lined with windows. And I am amazed by the suggestion here that he wants these windows to look out so that he has the ability to look out, but he is not afraid of anyone looking in. And that also communicates, I think, such confidence from him, right? Like
Power.
you just said, he is living his life very much in the open. And very much under this disguise of normalcy. And that is so much more frightening, I think, than a lot more of our like serial killers within media who just are like deranged and tearing pages out of books and eating them or whatever else we have going on. But with this, it's like it seems all everything else excluded from this moment, it's a very nice date.
Very thoughtful. Lovely gin and tea after a bathroom break, refreshing. And now putting on a movie that she can't see or hear.
And that she doesn't
How many
ask him
times do
about.
couples put on movies they don't care if they actually see and hear them because they're just doom scrolling on their phone or they want to get flirtatious? It's like Netflix is those old crass jokes. Netflix, are you still watching? No, we're
Yeah,
not actually. Mom and dad are not watching right now. Dad are doing something else.
Okay, let's get to them doing
Francis,
something
that was a
else.
great dinner. Thank you.
I made you a gin and tonic. It's right in front of you.
God, he's such a striking looking man.
You're
Holy
welcome.
shit.
Just a little homework.
And let me get the push
Oh,
in,
I
as we
love
did
the push.
before.
I love the push. And then, and the push is mirroring his zooming in on her, us
Yes.
zooming in on him
Yes.
zooming in on this next prospective victim.
And then
Then, yeah, straight to her chest.
the breast shot.
Typical breast looking shots. God,
Yep.
he's just got such an amazing face. It's an hour 20, 24 seconds. The light from the projector coming, the green lights in the background. He's just magnificent. I love everything about his character design. He's just special.
Especially because his expression in this scene changes in such a fascinating way. Because and I think in my notes I just put like he's enthralled, right? It's very clear to me at least that he is aroused by the looking and being with a woman who doesn't know that he's looking. Like the fact that she is unaware of everything is so important to this moment. And I don't think he had any expectation of what's going to happen next.
No, I think he's the shocked one. I've always thought
Yeah.
that. Like
Yeah.
with what happens
Yes.
next, I'm like, Reba,
Yeah.
damn girl, like I love it. I'm like, you rock the greatest dad of all
But
time.
the greatest date of all time. But for him to go, I think, like so enthralled and feel like he's doing something in secret and feel like he's really in possession of this dynamic, and for how that changes, just how his face changes
Yeah,
to like being shocked
there's a
and
satisfaction.
bashful. There's a
Naughtiness is happening.
satisfaction. Yeah, there's a lot happening on his face that is just really we have to talk about it. We have to watch through it.
Yeah, we've got to watch it. And I also love what you said, just to touch on is like he's had an inanimate audience at his own by his own hand. And Reba in many ways is that one extension into like an animated audience, but they can't see. So it's just like her presence is there. So the seeing and the watching and the reflections on the glass and the reflections on the windows, he's getting this audience experience, and there's a living person there who is an unwitting and unknowing participant into this becoming and seeing and reflecting back to him his experience. And what's so cool is like she's so sweet and adorable and just like not even conscious of what's happening, really. She's just on like a ripper of a date, getting a G&T, getting dinner made and hanging out with a really tall guy. And if I can speak to any of my single lady friends, I've heard about dates that could be this. Just quite.
Yeah.
Like, he was, what was he like? He was really tall. I think you see him like he's
he was really tall.
He's a mutant.
He's really Francis tall. And he made me dinner. And he also might be a serial killer. I don't know. It's hard to say. I need to go on another date to figure it out.
The dating experience in 24 is literally out of this movie.
So bad.
Great house. Great taste in furniture. Made me dinner. Absolutely. G&T. Super tall. Serial killer? Question mark. Not sure.
Other unsettling questions to be determined.
Oh, so you're going on a second date. Oh, for sure. Oh, cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad you're ignoring all of your instincts. That's good.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So he is watching. He's enjoying the washing.
Mm. Now he's running his eyes up Joan Allen's live leg. And he's just he's got a live thing that's actually distracting him from what he's watching.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the texture.
Okay, see the glass. The glass is textured. Yep.
Yeah, great texture on that glass. Hold on. Let's just go back. I'm going to rewind it. So it goes up and he's looking at the texture of her, the way that her clothes are hanging on her body.
Mm-hmm.
And then this beautiful old projector. And then, yes, this textured glass coming up to her lips.
Her mouth.
God, thank God for high definition. Her mouth, you can see the pores on her skin. So, like, natural colored compared to everything else. It's great. This.
The blink. Ugh, the blink.
The blink
oh
is just
God.
Yuck. Yuck, everyone.
Yeah, the blink is horrible. Excellent, but horrible.
Very satisfying. Yes, you're watching a man being aroused in not a grotesque or affronting way, but a grotesque way because you know what he's being aroused thinking about. We've already seen.
Yeah.
We already see. It's not necessarily this like leering, I'm perving on a woman. It's like she's the next cast member in my next scene. You know, that's what's the creepiest thing. And he's so happy.
It's very much like the perceived triumph, right?
Yes.
Again, there is like no doubt to this man. He does not think that he is going to fail. So by already identifying the next person, it's already winning, right?
Yes.
And then again, like what Reba does, I complicates that, derails that a little bit.
It does. It's 1 hour, 20 minutes, 53 seconds. He's in this moment of like transcendent satisfaction. And then you see Reba smile because they're just sitting in silence, anticipation. And he's just enjoying his time. And their mouths opening, man focusing on Reba's mouth as just like beautiful echoing. They're pivoting between these two beautiful edits. She does this little smile and then her hand
goes behind his.
Goes behind his. And I love this. It's 1 hour, 21 minutes and 7 seconds. The shock in his eyes, like, whoa.
Yes. Yes. I love the frame of this. And just what is happening, right, is that she is almost blocking out the projector. It is like the real world and his fantasy world smashing together. It is the question of, can the real world also be satisfying? Could I be desired? Because so much of what he's doing is searching for like recognition and searching for watching and searching for desire. And then to be actually confronted with that. Yes. What you said about the shock in his eyes.
There's a shock.
It's like, oh, I planned this entire evening. I did not plan this.
That's the eyes of every husband who's made his wife a nice meal and has made her a G&T and they're watching a terrible movie and then she instigates and you're like, whoa, hey, this is great. I'm in.
The female gaze. female gaze.
Hey,
yeah,
man,
no,
female...
I love this. I love everything that's happening.
That's poetry,
in this
Ross. Hey,
moment.
Man, comma.
I'm telling you,
gaze.
Female gaze. But yes, it is such a great little moment for him as an actor, just to what he communicates with that like shocked
Shock.
look. Yeah.
Shock. Yeah. Brilliant.
And she's really in control of this kiss.
Oh,
She
yeah.
is pushing in. She's doing a lot of the like smooching. It's a lot of her spit leaving his mouth.
Yeah.
And he
Oh, this is so fun. This is really fun. I'm
yeah.
sorry.
And and aghast is not the right word because I think aghast has like some element of like disgust. But I just think it's so clear that he never thought this would happen, and this changes everything, right? Like, we'll talk about this in the next sort of setup in bed together, but this isn't what he anticipated in any
So,
way.
what's funny there is they have this kiss,
Yeah.
and what you notice in the background as well, there's just this like little. I have to get back to just really quickly to go back. So we're just sort of going back. We're at 1 hour, 21 minutes and 9 seconds. So then you go back and you see this other television that Francis has in this beautiful home. You see another lunar landscape that goes into the grand kitchen where we'll be later, his telephone. And as a TV flickering, he's not really concerned about it. It's the white noise. It starts to sort of triangulate some of the theory that we're saying into practice around he's just got all these lights and reflections. He's orchestrating, he's living out this fantasy and he's flickering it. It's almost like he's creating the shutter speed on multiple angles of his house. But what's so cool is you're the elephant in the room has always been the projector and him seeing and wanting to see. And then there's this moment where in the wake of the kiss, we've just hit play again, 13, 14 seconds of the 21st minute. Joan Allen pulls back, satisfying kiss. And then the projector, it darts back to the projector like an eye that's been looking, and then it just flickers off.
Yes.
And then
Yes.
we arrive with Joan Allen
Thoughtful, Mandy.
talking dirty to Francis Dolarhyde. You're a very powerful man, D. Let's just watch this and try not to be as awkward as possible as we're staring at each other on a Zoom call. I think in UFC commentary they call this full mount. So
We're adults. We can do this.
yes.
We're getting his perspective, right? Seemingly how he is seeing her hovering above him. What I love about this, and you said this earlier, when we got the other shot in the living room, moon stuff, here also moon stuff, and a couple of women within the
Yes.
space images, right? So again, we're getting another sort of confirmation of like he feels like he belongs somewhere else, but what he wants in that somewhere else is a companion, right? And so whatever that dream had been, it is manifesting here.
A companion in the
And
void, literally. He's got like a woman
yes.
standing in the void with him.
In the abyss, yes, like floating among the stars with him. And I think well, we'll talk about this in the next setup.
In the sky. It's loud.
We're
And
adults. There's more writhing. There's some writhing.
there's some writhing, but also this is not one of those ones that like tickles you and you sort of chuckle at like the niceness. This is where you're seeing Francis Dolarhyde completely out of control. And he
Yeah.
looks in like he's in a state of agony. Whereas the first moment it's surprise and it's like
Yeah.
being overwhelmed. And now it's like you have this person who is loving you and is having a sexual moment with you, and your eyes are open and you're writhing, and your hand, he doesn't know what to do with his hands. His hands are almost like, do I grab her? Do I get her off me? Like
Yeah.
it's such a,
Yeah.
it's a torturous moment for him because
Is
like
it
there's nothing like alluring in it. He just looks like wounded and helpless. His hands are up in the air like an animal, like a dog laying on its back to get a pat on its belly. You know, like it's as we're playing through this sequence, like
Jane.
And he's closing his eyes. He's scrunching his eyes. He doesn't know. It's almost like a sensory overload. He doesn't know in this moment what he should be feeling. It's a really interesting scene. And then that's the, like, that kind of, you know, whatever trauma that this guy has had to become this guy. You're really seeing it played out in this moment that normally in a movie you'd be like, oh, there's a sex scene. It's going to be like this big, big romantic alluring thing. And we've had sort of the introduction there, but Michael Mann's like, no, I'm going to make this the most awkward and agonizing and weird moment in the film. And you're going to have to sit here and sort of consume it and deal with the fallout of it. What are we going to see from Francis here?
Yeah. To me, it feels super virginal. Right.
Yes.
And I like what you said about like sensory overload. It's like, what do I do with my hands? What do I do with my face? She is kissing him. He is not at any point yet returning her kiss. It very much is, I think to me, I read it as this is something that he wants or thinks that he wanted, but it is such an impossibility and so unbelievable that you're like frozen in the shock of the moment of like, what do I do here, right? Like what is my responsibility? What does she want of me? And I think we get a clearer sense of what he thinks a relationship should be in the next sort of interaction between the two of them. Yeah. But yeah, I think all of this also comes back if he is a virgin, and that is sort of, or this is perhaps like the first sexual experience in which he is being desired. To me, that goes back again to the question of like transformation and becoming, and like, yep, he thought that he was like transforming into something specific. And this is like a different sort of like growth process, right? So it also goes back to all of Will's questions about like, what were your intentions for yourself? And
yeah,
how does this change them?
In his mind also, he's been growing more powerful and stronger. And right now he's so helpless.
Yeah.
Which is why you see he takes the perceived Reba relationship or Reba like infidelity, even though it's like literally all
it's literally
in his imagination.
This man drove her home.
A person drove her home. And she's blind, yeah, right? Like the imagining of that moment is so, it plays clearer when you go like, this woman made him feel helpless.
Yes.
And he feels like he's under her spell, which is a guy that is so domineering and powerful. And we've heard nothing but like, yes, giant man, power, control.
Yes.
All those sorts of things that we've heard so far. And, you know, and I also love, we didn't talk about it yet, but just the as a contrast, the last time we're in Dee's home, he's like assaulting Freddie Lang, you know, Freddie Lang's right. Stephen Lang's character.
Yes.
He's assaulted him. And in the same moment you come back into this home and it's so beautiful and nice. It's like, it's again, this space is transforming as different shades of Dollarhide are opening up as well, which is really cool.
As his different needs, either explicit or implicit, are met, right?
Yes.
Because I do think this is a need that he had, but one that he would not allow himself, perhaps, to feel. Which, again, like, I know I keep saying, like, the next moment. But, like, that's the great thing about this movie.
It's just like every moment.
Yes. Is also great.
Yeah.
All right.
He starts calming down and chilling the hell out.
Yeah. Yes.
At the conclusion of whatever they're doing here.
Yes. I think he actually lets his hands rest on her.
Yes.
Whereas before, like you said, they'd been sort of like crunching, uncrunching.
And he's like touching her. They seem to be done. And then you get this next cut, this pan. This is where the decor does show like a little bit of age and weariness. Mm-hmm. It's just this old like flat floral wallpaper pattern into this old room. It does look like we jumped through time and we come back to Francis snuggling a naked Reba in bed.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's not snuggling.
Being snuggled.
Yes. He is being snuggled. Yeah, because I think that's important here. So he is being snuggled. He's sort of what makes me laugh about this is he picks up her arm almost like, who is this person?
What happened?
Is she actually human? Does she actually want me?
Yes.
But yeah, the rearranging that occurs here. So he picks up her arm and
Yes.
then sort of like lays it down. She like moves to be more on her back, and then he takes the like little boy resting on his mother
And listens
pose.
to the heartbeat of the tiger
Yes.
moment. But
Yes.
he's,
Yes.
and that's so
Yes.
comforting to him.
All about like sedation and the transfer of control and power. And then she just very naturally goes back into this like trusting position, which again, I love that we move closer to his face because it's clearly blowing his mind. He
Like,
like
I can't
looks
believe.
down on her almost with like exhilaration and fear, I
What is
think.
going on? Yes. I yeah, like
Yeah.
it's like it's like hypervent it gives me the sense of like hyperventilation when I see his gesture, because he's like he's got his neck tucked back. He's like, oh, like
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. Like
Yeah.
everything about it is just complete unfamiliarity, because again, he's still been dealing with in his awful scenes that he's becoming
Yeah.
inanimate things, like posing. But now he's got this woman who's like got a heartbeat and she's breathing and she's touching him and he's feeling things and
Yes.
she's there's sensory things happening to his body, like chemical. And so he's like, oh, like I don't know what to do. And it's just great. And it's just zooming in. This whole examination of the scene is just so delicate. And then he's like looking at her hand and getting her to cover his mouth.
Yeah. Willingly allowing himself to be restrained, right, as he weeps. There's something like incredibly beautiful about this.
It really
As
is using
ups.
someone else's hand as the cover of your
Yeah.
mouth, because that's such a like a theatrical gesture of like covering your mouth and
Yes.
weeping. And the
Yes.
camera's been pushing
Yes.
in, the music's steady, and he covers with her
Yes.
hand. So there's an incongruity between his massive manly head and her beautiful, delicate fingers on his hand.
Yes.
It's like an album cover.
Yes. It is like an album cover. I also think for him, this is clearly the most intimate moment of this sequence,
Ever.
right? Like the
Ever.
sex is like whatever, the kiss was whatever, but listening to her
Speak for
heartbeat.
yourself. The kiss was great for me.
The kiss was
Thanks,
great. Okay. The kiss
Linda.
was very good. Reba enjoyed the kiss. But yeah, I think for this, like allowing this moment to occur is such a submission on his part, right? Although she does not know that she is weeping, she does not know what he is doing, the amount that he is revealing himself to her in this
And she'll
sequence
never
is
know.
just like
And she'll never
she'll
know
never
because
know.
she's just in that sleep days. That woman sleep days where there's so rarely like, you know, you can sort of float in and out of sleep, but you're sort of awake. She's never going to realize what was happening. She's just getting comfortable. He's getting comfortable. They're adjusting to one another and he's got,
Yeah.
and that's it.
Yeah. But I love what you're saying. Like, this is his idea of comfort.
Yeah.
This is his idea
Yeah.
of comfort.
I get it. I get it. Like just being touched. I want you to put your hand in
Yeah.
my face. That's good. That's what I want. Put your hand on me.
Yeah.
But for him, it's like cover my mouth. You know, that's the
Yeah.
he's so orally fixated because of his cleft palate or his you know, and his
Right.
scarring, and he's self-conscious. And it's like
Right.
he's
Right.
covering her up. She's touching it. She exists, and he's sort of weeping.
And the earlier moment from when they first meet, where she tries to feel his smile, right? And he
Yes.
rejects it. This is very much the circular ending of that, where it's like you can feel this now when you won't remember
Ever
it.
remember it.
Yeah.
Well, that is tragic. Amazing. God, Tom Noonan is spectacular in this film. Holy.
We're getting like this anguished weeping, quiet, anguished weeping.
And also just the play of like, you know, an actor's tool is their face, and he sort of takes away most of his tool with his hand covering his face, and then it's just all this beautiful, like his forehead scrunching, his eyes welling up. It's just, it's really special because it's like there's nowhere to hide for him because all the focus is in this laser between his eyes, and his eyes just there. It's really great. Then we get to the next morning.
Again, so same bedroom. Yeah, the lamps are amazing. Yeah, so same bedroom, and now we're seeing how much light comes into this house. Again, very covetable property.
Michael and Mann, there is an article in there somewhere. It's maybe not for me to write, but the covetable Michael Mann properties.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about like the Miami Vice penthouse. But okay, so sunlight is coming in. It is, I mean, a beautiful way to wake up. But there is now this immediate, where did she go? Yes. And the terror of like, was where could she have gone?
Was this a dream? She's a blind person. What the hell happened? Like, and you immediately think, I think if you've seen this, if you're unfamiliar with it, there's this moment where you're like, shit, what has she stumbled into in his house?
Yes. And I think the movie, find something.
She finds something. Right. The movie does better than that. Like, she's not going into a creepy room. She's just standing outside. This is a shot and a half. 1 hour, 24 minutes, 22 seconds. It's Joan Allen's Reba just standing on like what you assume is the Missouri River. Just looking out on the wharf, there's like the kiss and tuft of like some fog. There's a ship. Mm-hmm. Sun is rising. There's these, you know, reeds that are in the foreground. It is such a delightful and delectable composition. Sun is reflecting off the water. It's so warm. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's so different color palette wise from what the inside of the house was.
Yes.
Which was, for both of us, like this beautiful neon, cold, chilly, lunar type of palette. And here it is. Yeah, it's that beautiful, like earthy neutrals, the orange, pink, gold, purple of the horizon. I love this because there's so much to me about him wanting to keep her in his place.
Yes.
And her natural inclination being, I'm going to go outside.
I'm going to go outside and feel the sun. I'm going to go out and feel the elements, because she's obviously denied sight, but she can have a sensory experience.
Yeah.
I love this.
And then we're getting
he runs in. It doesn't go down the footpath. He like,
no. And I do, there is something that really touches me about his immediate question being concern.
Yes. You okay?
Again. Yeah. Like this sense of like, this movie does such a good job making him someone who is just layered and nuanced and in his insanity and violence still capable of other feelings, which again is what makes it scarier, right? That he is capable of concern and still chooses to do what he does. But yeah, his very like extreme tallness, awkwardly
the most awkward run he does, he cuts across the path and he's running awkwardly. It's almost like a kid who has a growth spurt who keeps running around a playground. And you're like, man, that kid doesn't even know what his legs are anymore. You know, like that. He's just plodding along.
Yes. So he reaches her, and that's where we're going to go back.
Morning.
Still in silhouette, just pushing.
No, no. Don't go back inside the house.
Okay. See, I've always wondered that moment where he's like, is it something about the night? Is it something? Yeah, don't go back in the house, but is it something about the night and the house where that's where all the safety is for him as well? It's like he's a nocturnal beast. It's almost like in the daylight, it loses the allure, it loses the magic. The light is not what he's controlling. You know, now in this beautiful house with a million windows, the sun is blazing down. I don't know what it is, but it's just that little touch of, obviously, don't go back into the house. he does the inference that there's some other creepiness that are in the house. But I think that that's more of like a hangover of the adaptation rather than what Michael Mann has now conceived of this character. I think it's got something deeper, which is like, this is a nocturnal guy. He, as we've seen, he's orchestrating these scenes, even in his own home, about how light bounces, how he interacts with it, all that sort of stuff. And now that it's in the, you know, the cold light of day, it's like, no, don't go back in. It's almost like, let's Jordan Harper, our mutual friend, Jordan Harper, says, like, when he's talking about writing, he's like, don't break the dream. You know, don't break the dream.
Yes.
And I almost like, no, don't break the dream. Don't go back inside. Like, don't go back inside.
That's absolutely, to me, what it is. Yes. It is, to me, we had this night together in which I was astonished by what we did, and I was able to be a version of myself that I have not. And I don't necessarily want to ruin that by going into the house and doing mundane things together, right? Like, he doesn't want to have coffee with her and, like, talk about the news. Like, that is not something,
you know. None of that. No. Let's just go.
Exactly. Let's keep for someone who has done so much arranging of other people's lives, I think that this is another attempt to, like, arrange his own. And if only because, like, to go back to what we were talking about, I can't imagine him being someone who just, like, keeps murder paraphernalia around the house, although he has killed people there. Yes, you know what I mean? Like, I can't see that happening. I think it's more about, like, what is her space now internally in his life? And how does going back into the house after what they did together change or disrupt that? But again, and you're talking about the push in, like, we push in and we see how these two are sort of, like, opposite each other, the awkward hug, right? But then how this scene ends with him being the one that goes into her, right? That, like, says so much about where this is going to go.
Just pushing.
I mean, you should stay outside. It's because you look so good in the sun.
Where he's like reaching for her.
She doesn't know that he's just like going to touch her, and he doesn't know if he should grab her hand. She does look good in the sun, and this is a magnificent push in.
Yes.
This is style, guys. This is style. Yes. It's outside. It's at a beautiful spot. They've probably had to shoot it over multiple days. The performances are really, like, if you screw something up here, it's a completely new setup because you're pushing in, you're waiting for it. You've got the awkward run. It's really difficult to orchestrate. But man alive, like, this is filmmaking. This is why we go to the movies. Like, we want to feel things. And how in the middle section of this movie you're getting this glorious sunset, this beautiful woman bathed in sunlight, and this absolutely psychotic creeper that, you know, you've seen have this whole experience. It's like turning the whole movie's experience on your head. Like, it's one of the great joys of this movie for me is, like, when we finally meet Frances, we don't do a lot of, like, there's not a lot of, like, tit for tat back and forth, like in the way that the novel works, where you're going into Francis's mind. You're just experiencing him and being consumed with him and seeing the complexity of him. And then you get reminded of his threat. And then we get back to Will being this sort of, you know, thing in motion to get to her. But I love this. I love this scene. It's just magnificent. And such a high degree of difficulty, and they just pull it off.
And to your point about, like, in the middle of this movie plopping in this sequence that makes you question this character, such an effective use of, here is this beautiful, warm, romantic situation from which you cannot shake a sense of dread.
Yes.
Right. And, like, all of Mann's movies, I think, just have this, like, churning, omnipresent sense of, like, this is not gonna go well for anyone. He is simultaneously, like, I've said this numerous times, like, our most romantic filmmaker, who perhaps also doesn't believe that love is something that can endure. And I adore this scene because it is very typical, I think, of us as viewers, or for certain viewers, to watch a scene like this and be like, maybe she'll change his mind.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll be a better person. Look at how beautiful the surroundings are. Maybe something could occur.
I think it feels like fear because
yeah.
if you meet yeah. Michael Mann, which I've been lucky enough to do, this is the big, most humble braggy piece of shit thing that I'm going to say.
Say right it. Now. Say it.
His wife, Summer, is such a beautiful woman and yeah. like such a beautiful like spirit. So yeah. kind. And he is such a loving dad and great mm-hmm. family man. You know, has a mess of daughters and extended family and grandkids. And for me, it feels like a person who is driven by obsessions, one of the core tenets of that fear is, oh, I know I'm going to be the one that's going to fuck all of this up in some
right.
way.
Right.
And there is right. like a fear of like that. And so when I see this now, I'm like, you know, when I see all these movies, it's just like one move left or right, one half beat too fast, too long, you miss. Like that feels like, I mean, obviously he's twisting it through the prism of this fiction. But for me, when mm-hmm. you meet him, you're just like, all these fraught relationships, which he's so beautiful in the movie, like come from like a real core fear of like when you are in one of those moments or you're in one of those relationships or loves and you're like, oh no, I'm the problem. I'm going to mess this up. There's no one else that's going to ruin this except me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that feels really real to me. It feels really
and
real.
And you get so much of that here with Will as well, yes. right? Like in the other sections that you were discussing in this film. I mean, I'm not gonna step on the toes of this section, but like the time is luck section,
yeah.
right? The like infamous for every man movie time is luck idea is a perfect encapsulation of that, of like, I have so much and I'm so close to losing it all. And I do think you get a little bit of that in this scene too. I think you get a sense of like, there is, I think, some sincerity in you look so beautiful in the sunlight, because this is something that he hasn't experienced with another woman. But to your point, probably does not deserve to experience.
No, he doesn't. Doesn't need that second date.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't deserve that second day. But I do think, I think we got into like a lot with this section. Well,
let's just play it out. Let's just play it out because it's just
it.
The final couple of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, when can I see you again?
When can I see you again?
Oh, yeah, we can meet at my house.
See us smiling in silhouette. Yeah, the most awkward Ugh. Cuddle.
Blake, the hug makes me sad. I'll be honest with you. The hug really makes me like, oh.
And as we conclude, the most devastatingly awkward and broken human, who is also a serial killer, is just
yeah.
relishing a, like an awkward hug with a woman who's
yeah.
changed his conception of life. Cool. Good
yeah.
sentiment to go out on.
I really love just how Michael Mann has the ability for me to be like, oh, that's
oh,
sad.
Sad.
This horrible man. I really feel for him.
But that's the compassion, right? Like he's so good at when he is dialing his attention to a character, good or bad, antagonist, protagonist, you are with them. And he's
yeah.
so good at developing empathy, even with heightened levels of awareness of all of the horror that that person may orchestrate. It's just,
yeah.
you're with them. You're with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's magical at that. You know, that's why his
yeah.
villains are so good. It's like Magua is right and is a bad guy. But like when you're with him, you're like, yeah, I'm with Magua right now. You know, I'm in this. When you're with Jose Hierro, you're with him, right? Like when you're with Vincent, Collateral, you're with him. You're with
yeah.
Vincent. You love his shit talking
yes.
braggadocio emptiness. You love
yes.
it.
The only one I think you're not with is Waingro.
No.
And I think because so much of Waingro is like a more cosmic evil.
Yes.
Whereas I think so much of this film You don't get a ton of Francis' backstory, and I don't think the film is trying to apologize for him in any way, but you get a sense of like the conditions that made this person. And I think that to me is what makes this section so effective, is because you have Will searching for that,
Yes.
and you have Francis being confronted with it from someone he never thought would be able to connect with him in a certain way. And that's the power of this section.
Oh my God, you're amazing. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you
No,
for
shut up. Thank you for having me on.
No, shut up. Shut up. Thank you for, yeah, man, the female gaze.
The female gaze. We gotta get shirts. We have to get
Oh, yeah,
shirts. The
man. The female,
next
it's so good. More merch. Super Yaki
t-shirt
collab.
run. Yes, please.
Just Joan Allen on a shirt that
Girls,
says, yeah, man, the female gaze.
the gaze. Super
Blindness.
Yaki,
Blindness.
are you even listening? Like, come on, print those
I
immediately.
the female gaze also that she's blind to dating a serial
I
killer.
know. I
It's
know.
perfect.
I know.
Sublime.
It should be every Michael Mann female protagonist. And then, yeah, man, the female gaze. It should
I'll
be like
take a bit.
Ashley Judd needs to be on there.
Speaking of the female gaze, shout out. Go and seek it out. It's somewhere in my Twitter by the time you guys are listening to this, or just search it out. There's some recent photography for like a gentleman's magazine in this in Europe, where Penelope Cruz takes photos of
For
her
Javier
husband,
Bardem.
Javier
Yeah,
Bardem.
they're
Speaking
very
of the female
good.
gaze, I
They're
mean,
very good.
such an attractive couple, it's actually disgusting.
Yes.
It's just
Yes.
stop it, you beautiful
We're just like,
bastards.
I hate both of you. I mean, I'm so happy you're happy together, but like, Jesus Christ.
Jesus
Yeah, there's a
Christ.
photo of him in the shower that I was just like, oh my
Oh my lordy.
goodness.
My lord,
Oh
lord. And
my
he's just
goodness, the female gaze.
the
Oh
fiend.
my goodness.
Latest Michael Mann deep dive at One Heat Minute Productions. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to check out other deep dive series we've done on Michael Mann, go over to oneheatminute.com. You can find links to all of our previous shows, including One Heat Minute, The Last 12 Minutes of the Mohicans, Miami Nice, featuring Katie Walsh and I, and all modern man movies, including Collateral, Ferrari, Black Hat, you name it, it is there. And the Jimmy Kahn Eulogy, One Thief Minute. Plenty of shows over there. If you want to support everything that we do, we'd greatly appreciate it if you checked out our Patreon / One Heat Minute. Over there, you can see weekly new releases. One Hot Take is the show there. You can also see The Decade Project, where we look back 10 years on the films that are still hanging around, currently working through 2014. They'll be on the main feed at the end of the year, but if you are a patron for as little as $1 a month, you're getting them all throughout the year. And most importantly, as this is a Min Hunter episode, Min Hunter video podcasts will be popping up. Not every single episode, but most episodes will pop up as a video podcast as a drop there. So you can watch and consume and see all of the frames and images that we're talking about in all of these episodes. Every little bit of your support helps. So sharing, talking to us online at OHM Pods, or for myself at One Blake Minute on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks so much for listening.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.